Time I've been in this building, I'd be a wealthy man by now, but it's a building that holds great fond memories for me. And great, Andrew, we're looking forward to having you on the Wirral. You're welcome. And it'll be great to have you follow us up there as well, as you followed us around the country so far. You should have a green handout. Let me say, what I'm going to do this morning is I'm only giving you one talk. It's just going to be in two halves. So the handout's for where we're going for the whole morning. And what I thought we'd do is we'll stop after about 35, 40 minutes, have a chance for questions, then we might get some coffee and some pastries, and then we'll come back and just carry on from wherever we've got to at that particular time. So I hope that's okay for you. If there's anything I say that's not clear, feel free to put a paw in the air. We're a kind of small enough group that you can do that, and I'll try and answer questions if you've got them. But we'll certainly have questions at the end of each session. In a student survey, a survey of students who'd just left university, they were asked what phrases they remembered their parents using. And a number of common answers came up. When I was your age, it's for your own good, you'll thank me for it later, whatever you're doing, stop it. If you pick it, it'll only get worse. Well, we've all got experience of parenthood. We've either been parents, are parents, or have been parented. And that's our topic for this morning. Now, let me say right at the outset what we're going to do. I'm going to try and give you a mixture of what is both biblical principles and practical tips. And you'll see on the handouts that there are little phrases, little spaces where it says some tips. And you can write down what I say at that point. You're free to. But you're absolutely free as well not to. In fact, you can completely disregard the practical tips whatsoever, because that's all they are, practical tips. They're the way that we as a couple, that's Joe and my wife sitting down at the front, they're the way we have tried to work out the biblical principles in the practice of our family, but they're only tips, they're only how we've done it, and if they're not helpful for you, then you needn't write them down, you can entirely forget them, and I wouldn't be hurt by that at all. Can I say that when we started having children, something my wife thinks we've finished, and, well, I'm still open to discussion about. But anyway, when we started having children, I went to the Christian bookshop, and I looked on the family section. There is a whole section on family issues. And I bought quite a lot of the books and read them. And one of the things that was most depressing was how little the Christian books on parenting engaged with what the Bible says about parenting. And they were full of sometimes good practical tips, but they didn't relate to what the Bible was saying. So these talks this morning have really come out of trying to look at what the Bible says. Now, of necessity, I'll give you how we've worked out those principles, but as I say, you're free to disregard them. Now, the first thing I want to say, by way of introduction, is to remind you of the immense privilege of parenthood. And you need to know that, because sometimes it doesn't always feel an immense privilege. Sometimes when you're dog tired and the children are giving you a hard time, it can feel anything but a privilege. But I want you to know that it is an enormous privilege. And I'm going to read you Psalm 127 and verses 3 to 5. You can follow it if you want, but it'll be familiar stuff. Sons are a heritage from the Lord, children a reward from him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are sons born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. Children are a heritage and a reward from God. That is, they are a blessing from God. That is, they are a gift from God. That is, it is an enormous privilege to be given children to bring up and look after. And so can I say, by way of practical tips, first, let your children know how much you enjoy being their parents. Let them know how much you enjoy it. I'm not saying lie at the times when it doesn't feel like a privilege, but I think your children ought to grow up, our children ought to grow up generally knowing that we're for them and that we think it's a great privilege being their parents. I was on a weekend last weekend, and I just heard a parent refer to his children as the brats. And somehow it just grated in me, and I thought, in the company of your children, saying that kind of thing is not terribly helpful for children to grow up thinking that they are brats. They may be, but not very helpful for the children to think that that's how we think of them. So I think we need to let our children know that we're pro them and that we enjoy being their parents. And the second thing I want to say by way of introduction, quite a number of things we're going to do this morning is talk about bringing up 0 to 7s and spend our time specifically thinking about what the Bible says about bringing up children. But can I say by way of introduction as well that we're not allowed to be anything less than Christian towards our children. In other words, what the Bible says we should, the way we should behave towards other people includes how we behave towards our children. So although we're going to look at the specifics of how to bring up little children, we're nonetheless still to be Christian, and therefore all the one another's, for example, of the New Testament apply to how we relate to our children as much as how we relate to anyone else. And that means our children, as they grow up, ought to expect us. Hi, welcome. Come and grab this. Always seats in the front row. Every Christian meeting I've ever been to has got seats in the front row. And therefore our children ought to see us as parents being Christian and living as Christians. So although the Bible doesn't say 0 to 7-year-old children have a right to see their parents having a godly marriage, have a right to see their parents serving at church, etc., etc., because those things are what the New Testament says Christians should be doing, our children ought to expect to see us doing those kind of things. But I'm not going to say anything more about that. Let your children see you being Christian. So, we're going to dive into the material itself, and I've got 2 points really only, and the first is this: partnership and patriarchy in parenthood. Partnership and patriarchy in parenthood. And I wonder whether you turn to Ephesians chapter 6. And I'm going to read verses 1 to 4. And I'm going to fill in until we've all found it. Because there's nothing worse, is there, at church than the person announces the Bible passage. He reads it while you're turning to it. When you've found it, he's finished. And you've neither read it yourself nor heard it read either. And there's nothing worse than that. So it's always a good idea, if you're the speaker, to kind of waffle for a minute or two until everyone's found it, which is what I've just been doing. And you've now found it, so I can now read it. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honour your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you, and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. I want to say first that there is a norm of partnership of two parents in the bringing up of children. Notice it says, verse 1, children, obey your parents in the plural. And the normal Bible expectation is that that children will have two parents of differing genders. I say that because that idea is greatly under attack, and you may well know that all various acts have gone through Parliament saying that that no longer needs to be the case. Certainly we don't need two of differing genders anymore, and same-sex marriages, which is a contradiction in terms, is going to be increasingly likely in our society. The norm of two different gendered parents. Having said that, the New Testament tells us to look out particularly for widows and orphans. And therefore I think we have a responsibility in our church families to have particular care for one-parent families, either a mother with children or a father with children, when they're on their own, for whatever reason has led them to be on their own. Can I say that I have found parenting, and I've got 3 under-7s, I've found parenting children fairly exhausting. Can I say I can only but imagine what it must be like to be a single parent of young children. We've got a number of single parents in our church family, and we want to encourage our church family to have a particular care where that family unit doesn't fit into the normal Bible expectation, for whatever reason. And so can I just, by way of parenthesis, say, if you've got single parent families that you know, do all you can to care for them and help them, and particularly in the issues of parenting, because it's just going to be very, very hard work. Children, obey your parents. At Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8, expects a partnership in that parenting role. I'll read you Proverbs 1:8. It's, again, a pretty well-known verse. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. The writer of Proverbs expects that there will be a partnership of husband and wife in the teaching of the children. And I want to encourage you to think of parenting as something that you are co-partners between husband and wife together in. That it's a responsibility that God has given equally to the man and to the woman. I say that because I think there are some common dangers that hinder the partnership between husband and wife, between father and mother, that make it sometimes seem as if the burden is placed more on one than the other. Now, whilst it's inevitably true that the burden of time and energy may well fall on one more than the other, it's not a helpful thing if one or other feels that the partnership is completely imbalanced in terms of responsibility. Now, I've jotted down three things that I think are common dangers that hinder the feeling of being together in bringing up young children. I think it's very often the case that the woman feels isolated in the partnership. Especially when young children come along, she can feel physically isolated. It may be the first time that she's been alone in the home with young children. She can feel isolated through little contact with other people. Before she was out at employment and busy and meeting people and seeing people all the time, and now suddenly she's alone with one or two people all on her own in the house, and she can feel lonely and isolated for long periods of time. The day can seem very long. Husband's gone back to work after the 1 week statutory paternity leave, and he goes out to work in the city at 7 o'clock in the morning. You know he's not coming back till 8 o'clock at night. And those 13 hours can seem very long indeed. Another reason is that the demands of parenting actually can often fall on the woman. Because she's alone with the child for so much of the time, she actually does pretty well all the work. She's the one who does the feeding. She's the one who changes the nappy. She's the one who's done the bathing. She's the one who's had to still keep the house going. By miracle, she's managed to produce a meal for her husband when he arrives home. And she can feel very exhausted, and exhaustion can lead to feelings of isolation. And that can easily lead then to feelings of resentment. Resentment that husband's out. Resentment that husband's still got the social interaction of employment. And she can feel very alone and very isolated. And she can feel that she is more than pulling her weight in the partnership, and the man she thinks isn't pulling his weight at all. After all, he just gets home at 8 o'clock. The children are pretty well in bed perhaps by then. He reads a good night story and says a good night prayer and gets a good night kiss, but that's really all he's done. And the woman feels very isolated. Another hindrance to the partnership of parenthood together is that the man can feel very rejected. He can feel that the woman's emotional side is now being shared. Previously, he got all her emotions, but now, of course, there are little ones around who get her emotions, and there seems to be little left for him. She's so tired at the end of the day that, frankly, there's not a lot from her, and he feels rejected. It's statistically true that sex becomes less frequent after the arrival of little children. Physically, that's inevitable. But even after things have recovered physically, it's still true statistically and the man can feel slightly pushed out, slightly rejected. Yeah, the possibilities of sex go down fairly rapidly after children. They're always awake before you in the morning. And you are just physically exhausted by the end of the day. So both those together can lead to feelings of untogetherness in the marriage, and therefore untogetherness in the partnership of bringing up children. And therefore I want to suggest you need to work very hard to keep the idea of partnership going. I think husband and wife need to make sure they have time together. This is tips, by the way. You can reject this if you like. You need to make sure you have time together as husband and wife, rather than just as mother and father. I think you need to make sure, therefore, there is non-child time together. That could be part of a day, half an hour in an evening. It could be part of a weekend. It could be a day in a month. It could be a weekend in a year, where you find find friends who might look after the after children for you. You might be in a position of having grandparents who can do that. But I think you need to create non-child to get time together so that you can be husband and wife, and then you need to create time together to talk about the partnership. Everything else that works as a partnership normally has the partners talking to each other. So husband and wife need to talk about how things are in the partnership of bringing up children. And then the third thing I've jotted down there of a reason why there are things that hinder the partnership of parenthood is the inconsistency between husband and wife in parenthood. That is where there's inconsistency in the way that both of you behave in your parenting of children. And it can lead to a real feeling of we're not in this together. So if one party has X rules and the spouse has Y rules in the bringing up of the children, it can lead to a real sense of we're not in this together. We've got a family in our church where the little girl said that she wanted to have a mobile phone. You know, come to the age at which children have mobile phones seems to be decreasing, and this little girl, she's only 7, said, "I want a mobile phone." Mum said no. So she says to Dad, "I want a mobile phone." So he went out and bought it. And of course, immediately the mother feels undermined, feels that she and husband are not in it together. Immediately feels, of course, that the child is then going to get whatever she wants, and leads to real difference. And what happens is children certainly spot it. And boy, because children are sinful, you can be absolutely sure they'll exploit it. And I'll say something a bit later about being consistent in discipline together. But inconsistency between parents and the way parents behave is something that brings about this huge kind of sense of we're not in it together. So I want to ask you if your parents, which I assume most of you are, or shortly to be parents, are you going to think about it as a partnership in which you are equal partners together? And I think that's absolutely crucial. Having said it's a partnership, can I say also something about the primacy of patriarchy? If you've still got Ephesians 6 open, notice how it says in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1, "Children, obey your parents." And I'll say something a little bit later about how it is the duty of both mothers and fathers to be involved in the instruction of children. And Proverbs 1:8 certainly suggested that. But notice in verse 4, if you've got an NIV, that it says, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." Now, if Paul had wanted in verse 4 to have said parents, he could have used the Greek word that he used in verse 1 for parents, but he deliberately uses the word father. And I want to say that, although this may be politically incorrect, I want to say that the Bible stresses the primacy of patriarchy, of the father being the head of the family, of the father having a primary responsibility in the leadership of the family and in the, therefore the bringing up of the children. We live in an age where there's been a real shift from the man as head of the family. Just look at the TV and how that shifted. In my lifetime, 30 years ago when I was a kid, the model family was the Brady Bunch. And Mr. Brady was good and upright. Well, now, what's the role model of the family now on TV? It's the Simpsons. And Homer Simpson is frankly pathetic. And that shows where society has drifted in the view of fathers being heads of families. But the Bible is clear that there are primary responsibilities in areas for fathers. And I'll say something about what they are in a moment. But I want to say, dads need to lead. And can I say, therefore, that when it gets to the last day, there will be more questions to the men about how they fathered their children than how high up they got on the ladder at work. And I say that because I think that it's very easy to become distracted from biblical priorities. And it's very easy to get bogged down, isn't it, into the kind of career and so on, and forget where the Bible's primary push is for us as blokes. And one of the primary pushes for us is to be people who are godly, and that is take a lead in the family. So, some tips to husbands, and we'll allow the wives to hear them, so that they can encourage, not nag, encourage their husbands towards doing this. Because in my experience of talking to lots of families in our church, the women are desperate actually for their husbands to take the spiritual lead in the family. They wish their husbands would do it. But we blokes, we're a bit reticent, aren't we? And kind of, we wimp out of our responsibilities. So let me suggest that our children see that we take the lead spiritually. Now, time pressures may mean that we can't always do all the teaching of our children, but nonetheless, they ought to see that we are the spiritual leader of our family. And I think, therefore, a good thing for our wives to do is to do things that actually show a deference to the husband as the leader in the family. So lines like, that's something we'll need to talk with Dad about when he gets home. Or, we'll talk about that as a family and ask Dad what he thinks at the weekend. And little ways that we can say to our children that we believe that the father is the leader of the family. Can I have another tip for us as dads in this regard? When we come to our responsibility to teach children, can I suggest that we're seen to be taking that seriously? And our children know that we take it seriously. I think that a good tip, if we are not there yet, if you haven't got slightly older children, maybe your children are little babies still, why not prepare to take the spiritual lead in your family by making sure that you're equipped for how to teach your children? I know of a church in another part of the world that suggests that all men who haven't got children above the age of two, so all men who are single or who are married, newly married, or have got just little babies, they make sure that they all do a good stint in the Sunday school. That they learn how to teach the Bible to children before they get to the point where they've got to teach the Bible to their children. Because many of us, I suspect, are learning as dads how to take the spiritual lead in the family on the hoof. We're learning it while we're on the job. Whereas there's quite a lot we could do before we got to the point where we had to do it. So if that's your situation, can I suggest you speak to Andrew afterwards and beg him that you're given a 2-year stint in Sunday school here. and and you get all the training and equipping that you can for how you will take the spiritual lead in your family. And can I suggest as a church, this is a bit rude of me to do it, but can I suggest that as a church, one thing a local church can do is make sure on the bookstall or somewhere in church are all the resources that are available for dads to take the spiritual lead in the family so that it's easy for them. Because many of us as dads, frankly, find it difficult to find when we're going to get out to the Christian bookshop to find the resources that we might use. So why not have them all at church? There's a tip. Brian and Andrew will make sure that happens. That's terrific. So there we are. That's point one. It's partnership and patriarchy in parenthood. So the two questions that you need to ask yourselves as you go home are these. First, when you get a moment later today as a couple, ask this. Do you both feel equally partners in the bringing up of the children? And then ask what you think your husband and wife would say. Because my experience is I often think I've got an equal partnership role, but my wife doesn't. Do you know, it's an extraordinary thing in our marriage, but I actually think that I do half of bath time. But my wife tells me that I don't. And she gets out the diary and we discover she's right. My perception was entirely wrong. So ask the question, do you both feel partners in the bringing up of children? I'm not asking do you both do equal amounts of everything. I'm asking whether you feel partners together. And then second question you need to ask is, do you feel in your marriage and in your family that the husband is taking the lead? Okay, that's the first point. Here's the second point. And we'll go on till about 20 to 11, then we'll stop. For coffee, is that about right? Something like that. Can I say second is aspirations and goals in parenthood. Aspirations and goals in parenthood. It seems to me parental competitiveness begins early and remains throughout your parenting life. Is your child walking yet? Mine started at 7 months. Is your child out of nappies yet? Mine was at 18 months. Has your children achieved the standard of 11 plus? Mine's been awarded a scholarship. How many GCSEs has your child got? Mine has 17 A stars. Has your child got into university? Oh, that's a form of polytechnic, isn't it? Mine's got into Cambridge. Has your child got a good job? Mine's earning £100,000 a year. Are your children married? Oh, mine are all married and they've all got 2.2 children each. Now, it would be a great surprise to me if deep down each of us here as parents didn't know something of that competitiveness. Most of it, let me say, is absolutely facile and sinful. Facile because most of those things matter very little. It's astonishing now, I've had a number of job interviews through my life. Do you know, nobody has yet asked me at what age I walked. Nobody's asked me when I got out of nappies. Nobody's asked me even how many O-levels I got. I take it we all needed to do most of those things at certain times, but quite when we did them is irrelevant largely, and therefore isn't it pathetic that we use those as ways of bolstering our own ego as parents is normally what it is. And it's really rather stupid and definitely sinful. So I want to ask you this question. What really are your ambitions for your children? What are your ambitions for your children? What do you want most for your children as they grow up? Or put it another way, what do you think God's desires are for your children? And then ask, are they the same? Because obviously they should be. Now, can I say there is nothing wrong with wanting your child to walk, be out of nappies, do well at school, get a good job, and have stable families, their normal desires. But are they our only ambitions and desires? And I ask that because, do you know, on the last day, I don't think many of the questions to us as parents are going to be, what age did your child walk? At what age did they get out of nappies? What age were they dry at night? And so on and so on. So what should be our goals? Well, let me say something about freedom and wisdom. Do you know, there are a whole area of things to do with bringing up children where I have struggled to find any Bible command at all. Do you know, I can't find any Bible command about whether your child should be breastfed or not. I can't find any Bible command about whether your child should have a dummy or not. No Bible command about whether your children should sleep in the same room as you when they're babies or not. No Bible command about whether they should have rigid sleep patterns or not. I can't even find any Bible commands about what feeding patterns your children should have. That they should is probably a good idea, but I can't find any Bible teaching on the matter. I can't find any Bible command about what age your child should be toilet trained. I can't find any Bible command about whether both parents should be in employment or one should be at home looking after the children. I can't find any Bible command about whether your child should be home educated, state educated, or privately educated. And isn't that liberating? Because frankly, those are so many of the things we get so bothered about and so het up about, and yet the Bible leaves them in the whole area of freedom and wisdom, without any commands at all. So having said that, therefore, can I say something about Pharisaism and judgmentalism? I think we as parents and as a local church need to make sure that we don't create an atmosphere that places values and approval in areas that aren't biblical issues. Can I say that I think it is a very subtle thing, but I've been in churches where the impression is given that there is a right and wrong in areas where the Bible says there's not, that it doesn't have any command at all. And it seems to me that to start, even if it's only subtly, creating rules on how to do things as parents when the Bible has no rules is Pharisaism. And in Mark 7, you'll remember that the Lord Jesus has got stinging rebuke for the creation of man-made traditions that are placed on a par with biblical commands. He has stinging rebuke for the Pharisees who do that. And so can I plead that as parents, in this whole area of competitiveness and value, that we don't give any impression that those things are issues of godliness. Because I know parents who've been made to feel that they, because they gave their child a dummy, that somehow they were slightly inferior as a parent. And the Bible doesn't say anything about dummies. Now, let me say, having said that, if we as local churches need to make sure we don't create the environment where there is a Pharisaism, we as individuals therefore need to obey Colossians 2:16 and make sure that we're not judged by people. Don't let anyone judge you by man-made rules. So if you are in a church at times that gives the impression that some ways in areas of freedom are better than others, just make sure you go like that to the people who are doing it. Don't let them judge you. Now, having said that, and I think that is one of the most liberating things. When I discovered that, most of the things that parents talk about, the Bible doesn't have anything to say about. So it's just freedom. We're free. I found that wonderfully liberating. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that there aren't issues of wisdom in that. I'll give you an illustration. We have gone for, and I say this in no sense of superiority at all, believe me. We have opted for a strict bedtime policy. Our children go to bed at the same time every night. They are in a very, very settled pattern of what time they go to bed. We can predict pretty well, 95% of the time, what time they will go to sleep and what time they will wake up. And we've chosen to do that because it fits in best with our family life, wanting evenings, etc., etc., etc. Our next-door neighbours, who are a great family, have gone for the complete opposite policy. You could never predict what time Tom, Seb and Ollie go to sleep. They are often awake at 11 o'clock at night. They seem to kind of sleep whenever there's opportunity. And that's how Paul and Haley have decided to bring up their children. Can I say that there are pros and cons with both systems? With our system, we can have an evening meeting in our house at 8 o'clock and know that our children will be fine. Joe can go out for an evening, and I can have an evening meeting on my own in the house and know that the children will be asleep, and that's fine. A week ago yesterday, we came down to do a church house party down in London, and we got dreadfully stuck on the M1. And our children didn't get to bed until 2 or 3 hours after their normal bedtime. Boy, did we pay for it the next day. They were as grouchy as can be on the Saturday. Whereas Paul and Haley's kids go to sleep at 11 o'clock, are fine the next day, because that's just how their family operates. I think that's just an area of entire wisdom and freedom. And you just need to think, what are the consequences of how we'll do it? We're free to make up our minds, we're free to decide for ourselves, but how will we do it? And then let me say, before we haven't got to any of the aspirations and goals yet. We haven't got any of the bits you wanted to come and hear about, have we yet? Never mind. Let me say something about godliness and worldliness. As we think about our goals and aspirations for our children, can I say that the real issue is whether we want godly priorities or worldly priorities for our children. And really, I suppose what I'm saying at the outset here is, our prayers for our children and our parenting of our children ought to be primarily designed that they become Christian. Can I say that a child who grows up with no GCSEs, who remains single, who ends up a dustman, but is Christian, is a far greater joy to us as parents than one who goes to Cambridge, gets a first, gets married to a stunningly beautiful partner, gets a great job in the city, but isn't a Christian. And can I say, the struggle to believe that and its implications all the way through our parenthood is what I think is the greatest pressure on us as parents. Do we believe that the greatest good for our children is that they become Christian? And that'll be far better than anything else. And I say that because right at the outset, before we get to the 6 goals that I think the Bible does tell us, can I say that it seems to me that as parents we'll make all kinds of sacrifices for our children that are worldly, and yet it's staggering how few sacrifices we'll make for them to be godly. Okay? So you'll meet parents who will scrimp and save and do all kinds of things to make sure their children get a private education and go skiing every year, but won't invest time and energy and money that their children grow up to be godly. Okay? I think we'll stop and have questions there, shall we? Yeah, is that a good... We're stopping for coffee at 11. Do you want to ask questions at this point? And then we'll go on to perhaps the first point, for the first goal. And I will repeat any questions for the sake of anybody who happens to endure this on tape. Would anyone like to ask a question or make a comment at this point? No? Yes, Richard. Yeah, that's a point. The question is, how do we go about teaching our children? That's going to be point C, I think, that we'll come to. Yeah. And if I don't answer any question you particularly want answering, make sure you ask at the end of the next session. Okay? Yes. The question is, any comments on the fact that men aren't around and aren't in demanding jobs? Well, I think that as a couple, you need to make decisions about the kind of lifestyle that you want. At the risk of being at one extreme, you could even think, if the lifestyle means that it's very difficult for fathers to take the lead in being godly husbands and fathers, you might want to ask, do you want to work in the centre of London? You could go to that extreme. And let me say that, as a little plug for the North West, people who live in the North West go to work at 8:30 and come home at 6:00. Do you know, in the North West, I can have a church meeting at 6:30 and all the men can be there. I'm not saying it's wrong to have demanding jobs in the city, of course. I'm saying that one of the things that I think is difficult is that we have lots of things that are competing on us. When I first became a Christian, I think I thought that the way things operated was on a league table or a ladder system of priorities. That it was marriage first, children second, job third, church fourth. Do you know, I don't think that's a biblical idea at all. It seems to me that the Bible tells us all kinds of competing things for our time. I am called to be a godly husband who gives himself to his wife. I'm called to be a father who takes the lead in the family. I'm called as a Christian to serve in my local church. The Bible tells me I must earn to feed myself and feed my family. And those aren't in a league table, they've just all got to be done. And wisdom says I've got to keep on working out, have I subtly allowed one to edge rather than thinking I've got to do all of them? You see, it's not an option for me to say, well, I've got to be a godly father, so I won't do anything at church. It's not an either or, they're both ands. They're, in fact, all of those are all ands. And so I think constantly husbands and wives ought to be re-evaluating. And sometimes it may mean not taking the promotion up the ladder, because to go up that ladder may mean I just won't get the time at that point. And I think it's just godly wisdom is needed. What I would say to us as dads is that we must make sure that we don't allow our employment to become an excuse or a substitute for either being godly husbands, leading fathers, or Christian servants. And it can be very subtle that we get sucked into the work thing and allow it to take away from our other responsibilities. And they're all responsibilities. Just as, let me say, it's very easy to allow church and activity at church to take over so that I'm not a godly husband. It's very easy, in fact, to allow family to take over so that I'm not a Christian servant at church. And all I'm saying is, you see, there are a whole range of things that the Bible commands us to do, and we've got to keep on working and juggling them constantly. I'm not sure I can give you more wisdom than that, sorry. Yes. The question is, what part does prayer play in partnership? Well, I think that in family life, and I'm going to say this in a bit, that prayer ought to be part of family life. Now, whether that's husband and wives praying together, whether that's families praying together, I think it ought to be part of how things go. And we as Christians ought to be praying for our children. And I take it praying that they will become Christian and grow up as Christian and remain Christian. I'll say something about how we treat them as Christians a little bit later. But I think certainly Yeah. Limit or encourage the role. How do you cope with grandparents? I'll say something about that a little bit later on. I've got a little section on grandparents. Okay? Yes. I didn't find any particular book that I've looked at great on the Bible bits, but I found lots of books that are good on the common sense. And let me say that I don't think that they are limited to Christians either. You know, Jay will tell you, toddler taming, we've looked at, haven't we? Dr. Christopher Green, not the Oak Hill Chris Green, but another one. And we've toddler taming, and it's got some terrifically good practical wisdom. Non-Christians come up with good ideas as well as Christians. So go into the bookshop and read the books, and pick up things that you think are good tips, and talk to other families about how they do it. But do it in such a way that you don't make it into a Pharisaism of rules.